fever down in my soul, that alpha fever, zoom, zoom, zoom. My brother, I love my black and gold.
Ooh, sis.
I got the fever all in my body, the fever down in my soul, that alpha fever.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to First Impulse. I am Mike Richardson. This is the official podcast of the Pi Upsilon Lambda chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated.
Oh, six.
I am joined by my good brother, Brother Mike McCoy from Pi Upsilon Lambda. This podcast is about PUL and how PUL services the community. We talk through some of the initiatives that are going on in the chapter and in the fraternity, and then also how those impact you and the community. So we'll talk through important community events. This particular episode is all about election and voter efforts. Episode one, we looked at the history of, or the origin of Pi Upsilon Lambda chapter, and that was an interview with our charter president, Brother Alex Bailey. This episode, we're joined by Brother McCoy and later Brother Bulware, who talked through Pi Upsilon Lambda. So welcome to the second episode of First Impulse.
Well, thank you, Brother Richardson. Definitely appreciate the invite. For all of you who are listening, this is actually my first podcast, so I'm really, really stoked that Brother Richardson was able to invite me, and we'll just sit here and chop it up, and we talk about voting and what PUL has done for the community.
Okay, so we'll talk a little bit later about Voteless Peoples and Hopeless People, which is the Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated national campaign started in the 1930s to educate and register voters to have a bigger impact on our communities through the mechanism of elections and voter efforts. And out of that, the different chapters in the fraternity participate in that national program in different ways. We are the Pi Upsilon Lambda chapter are approaching our 30th anniversary. That will be August 1st, 2023. And so as we lead up to this, we'll be podcasting to talk a little bit about the chapter and how our efforts impact you. So in the run up to the November 8th election, we want to talk through some of the history of what Pi Upsilon Lambda has done. As I am a neophyte, I brought my big brother along with me to educate me and you on the different ways that the chapter has been involved in the community through the efforts of voter registration and voter education. So I'll turn it over to you, Brother McCoy. How has the chapter been working in our community to support the national program of Voteless Peoples and Hopeless People?
Well, like you, Brother Richardson, let me preface that question by saying, as you talked with Brother Bailey, our charter president, as you know, PUL is actually a reclamation chapter. So I am a reclaimed brother. I actually joined Pi Upsilon Lambda back in 2008, 2009. I've been an alpha brother. Next month, November 30th, will mark 38 years.
All right.
as an alpha man. But joining PUL, I joined PUL in 2008, 2009. And just that first year was just spent kind of getting my bearings. Mm. After the first year, Paul Brown, who was the president at that time, said, okay, Brother McCoy, you had a chance to sit back, watch how things go. We're going to put you to work. Mm. And he put me involved voter education. Fortunately, I was not alone. I worked with one of the previous presidents, Brother Tony Harris,
okay,
on some voter initiatives. And basically what it was just getting, you know, not only hitting the benchmark for the national program of Voteless Peoples and Hopeless People, but just coming up with some ways to how to streamline that program for more local focus here in Prince George's County. One of the things that we definitely realized was we needed to get more people registered to vote. You know, a lot of people sit back and complain about decisions that are made, mm-hmm, and they have no input. And part of that is you got to vote.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to the voting part, there's the educational component where we need to know what's being discussed, what's on the table, and how to be present so that we can ask those questions to influence the decisions that are going to be made, whether they're positive decisions or negative decisions. And part of that is not just voting and being registered to vote, but the other part is as active citizens being participants. And I think a lot of, you know, especially for what I've seen over the number of years, because my background is in political science. So okay. I tend to look at things through a historical and political lens. We, and I'm talking about we as the electorate, American people as a total, not just breaking it down in racial dynamics or racial separation, right. but just as a collective, we have been derelict in that duty. And we have contributed to the climate that we're finding ourselves in because we've been derelict to that duty. So,
okay, so let's talk about that. In what specific ways do you feel like we have missed our opportunities to impact the world that we see through politics?
Part of that, and this is the opinion of Michael McCoy, and you know, the views and opinions are my own and not Pi Epsilon Lambda or Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. Part of that, again, is the dereliction. We don't research candidates. Mm-hmm. We don't do our due diligence in finding out what their policy positions are, whether the policy positions are good for us or they're not so good for us. We rely a lot upon, you know, remember that movie with Eddie Murphy where he was the con man running for Congress? I forgot what the Distinguished Gentleman.
Distinguished Gentleman, okay.
Right. And he basically latched onto the dead congressman and, you know, vote for you and the name. And a lot of that is what we've done is we latch onto names. Mm. We don't study what the names mean, what they represent, how they can help us, how they can harm us. We don't look at issues. A lot of the focus with candidates, as I see it now, tends to be national and not local. And so the emphasis has always been on the national level, which is important, but politics, I definitely believe, are local. Stuff that happens within your own community, mm-hmm. you need to know what's going on. So if they're talking about reducing your trash pickup from 3 days to 1 day, and you realize you live in a household where you get a lot of garbage and you don't live close to the landfill, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. So let me ask you, do you think our proximity to the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., helps or hinders our ability to see our local politics? Because we're right down the street from the U.S. Capitol, and those are national politics. But in this area, the national politics are also our local politics. So that's an additional layer that a lot of people don't have.
Right.
So how do you see that impacting the way that we view our political landscape?
I think the way we view our political landscape, particularly here in Prince George's County, Maryland, and in even the surrounding suburbs, whether you live in Maryland or whether you live in Northern Virginia, I think it's interchangeable, depending on what the issue is and what the situation is. A lot of it, just in my view, can be viewed interchangeably. The particular focus, and especially for me these last couple of years, has just been what our local focus is. Not so much the national focus, because national is going to be there, but it always has a trickle-down effect. Local impacts you immediately. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what's happening with our schools, what's happening with trash pickup, what's happening with crime.
Is, and we just went through this, for instance, in Prince George's County, when COVID hit, we were under pressure from the state administration to, let's say, open up schools.
Right.
It was our county executive that pushed back and said, well, for this county,
right,
with this high population of this vulnerable people, mm-hmm. we're going to make sure that at the time it was keep our kids virtual learning for a longer period of time.
Right.
And so that's an example of how local politics becomes the thing that affects your everyday life.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, and personally, I applaud Angela Alsobrooks for that. But, you know, that came not without any type of consequence because, you know, now we're seeing some of the impacts on virtual learning and how it has affected our student population. But one of the things that people have to realize is we were in uncharted territory with COVID.
Yeah.
This is something that has not happened where you had a national pandemic in quite some time. Yeah. And we were navigating from the national, regional, state, and local levels. We were navigating uncharted territories. You know, the other thing you had to take in consideration, again, like you're talking about vulnerable populations, the high death rates, the infection rates, all of that stuff that came into props. So the decision that the county executive made obviously wasn't an easy decision, but I think it really helped because in the end we saw the infection rates get lowered.
Well, yeah, and that was a no-win situation. You were trying to choose the lesser issue, and it's a lot easier to remediate a learning gap than it is to recover if, let's say, a child is severely incapacitated or in the worst case, dies.
Right.
You can't remediate that. Right. So we're dealing with the impact of that decision, but that doesn't necessarily make it the wrong decision. It's just one of those things where the county executive looked at what we have in this county and made an executive decision.
Mm-hmm.
And for good or bad, you know, I'm thankful my children are here.
Right.
And we're remediating some things, but I'm thankful that they're here. We can work through that.
Right. And in a way, it even affected, and not necessarily, not just with the children, but just with other populations. You know, I live in a household where I have people with pre-existing conditions.
Mm.
So that was another consideration that I had to take into account because, hey, you know, I could be healthy as a horse. And I could go out here and do all these wonderful things and not really worry about COVID. But, you know, I got a wife and son that live at home. So, you know, I had to be, you know, I could be totally selfish and, you know, risk exposure to them. But then at the same time, I wasn't. So, you know, there were other things that go into that decision making. But again, politics, decision making, a lot of these issues that were affecting us nationally, but at the local level, it was just as impactful.
Another one of those local areas to not move from children is this school board. Mm-hmm. We have school board elections coming up. We've been dealing in this county with a dysfunctional school board that is not, and that is putting it kindly. And so we have the opportunity to influence that. Mm-hmm. We also have at the top executive level is the gubernatorial election where we have Wes Moore, who's a brother of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, running against Dan Cox. And our choice will matter for us. For anyone who saw the debate, I'm sure you have some opinions based on what you saw.
To be quite honest, I didn't watch the debate. And the reason why, even though I observe a lot of political sense, just to be quite honest, I'm debate out. Because part of, I came along in an era where debates mattered and it was substantive. Now they're just at homing and attacks upon one another. And you very rarely get to the heart of the issues for the candidates to kind of talk about. You know, they might give a 30-second soundbite about their platform. But the rest of the time is spent either attacking somebody or defending yourself from an attack. So for me, as a voter, I don't get, you know, that the debate doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, it's very difficult in this current two-party system that we have. The benefit of multiple parties is that you have multiple ideas entering the discourse.
Right.
But in the current climate of the American multi-party system, you have one side with policy ideas, and then you have the other side with no substantive policy opinions or goals of any kind.
Yeah.
And that's bad for both parties. I mean, if you like the one party that has some party ideas and are approaching the conversation, you almost end up with a monopoly.
Right.
And so how do you push back when one of their ideas does not align with what you think?
Right.
The other party is not an option because they're not governing.
Right.
And so right now I understand the disinterest in debates because you're not going to hear anything substantive coming from the other side,
right?
That would give you pause to say, oh, you know, that may make sense. Maybe I should consider voting for them.
Right.
That's just not there right now.
Right. No. And that's the unfortunate aspect of it. And it spills over into the feeling, why should I vote? My vote doesn't matter. And part of that is, again, being astute enough to know what is happening, where we're going, finding out what impacts you, because you can change your focus. You don't necessarily have to vote to be nationally focused, although that's important.
Mm.
Again, politics are local. What are you, the voter, passionate about? What is impacting you as a resident of the county?
Mm.
You know, we've got inflation, we've got crime, we've got issues going on in our schools. We got the way the county is being developed in terms of real estate and business. Taxes, all of that stuff. So there's a hodgepodge or a smorgasbord of items that voters can choose from to find out what's important to them and find out those candidates that either support your views on these issues, or they don't support your views on these issues, and then you make the appropriate vote.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the chapter and the different voter registration efforts or voter education efforts that you've seen in your time since you've joined.
Okay. One of the things that we, when I was appointed to lead the committee by Brother Brown, my big focus at that particular point in time was just getting out there and getting people registered. Because at the time in, 2008, 2009, we were coming off the Obama wave. Mm-hmm. We still had a lot of people that weren't registered to vote. And it was a couple of areas. One, we had a lot of black and brown people in the county that weren't registered to vote. And then also another part that we don't talk about are ex-felons. Mm. Under Maryland law, in a lot of places, ex-felons are excluded from the franchise. That's not the case in Maryland. If you are a ex-felon and you have successfully completed your probation or your parole, if you successfully complete either one or both of those components, the franchise can be restored to you. All you have to do is register to vote. So we focused on those particular areas throughout county, different parts. One of the other things was at the time I was appointed to the committee, my youngest son was in high school. And he's grown up hearing about, we're registered, this is a voting family, registered to vote. Only problem was he wasn't old enough. But one of the other things that I found out when registering to vote, you can register potential voters as young as 16. Now, for 2 years, you can even though you're registered at 16, that doesn't mean you can vote because you have to actually be 18 to vote. But you're on a roll, and so when you automatically turn 18 on your birthday, guess what? You get a voter registration card as a gift. So that's what I did with my son. And I'm thinking, if I did that with my son and a couple of his friends and whatnot, and I'm like, if I'm doing that with these high school kids, why not go and do this to the high school? So we specifically targeted some high schools. My son was attending Wise High School at the time. Mm-hmm. So we targeted Wise. We looked at Largo because at the time we were meeting at PUL's meeting at Prince George's Community College. So Largo was right next door. And we also did Parkdale High School. So we did three high schools. And I think we threw in one more. I believe it was Central from Sea Pleasant.
Okay. What was that process like to register a 16-year-old?
Well, we approached, before we even got started, we approached the school administration's officials first, told them what we were going to do and that we were interested in partnering with them in getting their 16 to 18-year-olds registered. They were more than happy to do it. We did not get a no or anything like that. So it was just a matter of coming up with days that we could go about doing it, having enough materials to register the students, and the school took care of the rest. So typically we did it during the lunch periods because that's when, they've got the most freedom. And the turnout was phenomenal. We've got some pictures posted on our Facebook page from voter outreach that we did at Largo High School. And that was just crazy because that was the turnout was a lot more than what I had expected. And we got kids from all backgrounds. Didn't matter whether you were a black kid, Latino kid, Asian kid, whatever. Fact is, you were in that demographic. You were 16 to 18 year old. The seniors were great because the seniors were like, oh, yeah, I'm 18. And, a couple weeks later, we heard some feedback from them. Yay, I got my voter registration card and boom. Awesome. The other ones were disappointed because, oh, man, I can't vote. But joy will come in the morning as soon as you turn 18.
As soon as your birthday comes. Yeah, that's awesome.
So we did that for the high school. Then the other thing was partnering with some of the advocacy organizations for other populations, particularly the Latino population in the northeastern part of the county. I used to live in the Chilham, Hyattsville area. And so over the years, the Latino population has increased. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the Latinos residents aren't registered to vote for a variety of reasons. We weren't worrying about that. We were just actually looking for folks who were U.S. citizens, who met the eligibility criteria for voting, but we needed help with doing that. My Spanish is really limited. My knowledge of the Latino community here in the county is really limited. So we partnered with some Latino advocacy groups. And we, typically went to the malls and everything and we're getting, registered voters from those outreaches. So that was the initial focus for my first two terms. Mm-hmm. Then my third term, we partnered with Brother Harris, because then we started looking, we were still doing the outreach. But then the other part was, let's look at some of these candidates that are running for the various offices. Let's have forums mm-hmm. so that the community can see and can ask questions on what are their positions on various issues of concerns to county residents. So that was the focus that we started to do. The registration outreach kind of like took a life of its own, because not only was PUL doing it itself, but we started partnering with Panhellenic organizations, some of the other advocacy groups within the community, and even some of our brother and sister organizations in the Divine Nine. Mm. So, you know, we were hitting different schools, different high schools, and even some of the private high schools, just with the voting to get young people out. So I remember my son was really disappointed he couldn't vote in 2008 because he was too young. Trust and believe, when 2012 came along, dude was happy as a lark.
Good. That's good that y'all are engaging the youth. But I also like that there's partnerships with the other organizations yes. in the National yes. Panhellenic Council. I know that there's a D9 Civic Engagement Coalition.
Yeah, that was something started by Brother Mike Nelson.
Okay.
As you know, Brother Nelson is heavily involved in the Panhellenic Council here in the county. So Brother Nelson, he and I worked together on a lot of initiatives in okay. the Voting Education Committee. But Brother Nelson took the lead on with the Panhellenic and worked definitely with the other Divine Nine organizations through the auspices of the Panhellenic Council to just expand the voter outreach in terms of registration, whether it involved registration, candidate swarms, the whole light. So that once again, we were letting the community know that, hey, there are some resources out here, there's some platforms out here where you can hear from different people about the issues that matter most to you. Hmm.
So I appreciate you coming out here and giving me an overview of what we've done with our 30 years in the county to make a difference in voter engagement, voter turnout. Mm-hmm. This is a critical time for us. All elections are important.
Yes.
We often hear that this election is especially consequential, but we do believe that for this round. And so for those who are not registered, I encourage you to...
Time's running out.
Yeah. The early voting is started in Maryland, so you can.
Yeah.
You can cast your ballot in Maryland.
Yes.
And if you need any assistance, please reach out to us at PUL1906 on our social media or PUL1906.org website. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can point you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Thank you again, Brother McCoy. I appreciate you visiting us for a minute to educate us on what PUL has done.
My pleasure. I mean, once again, thanks for the invitation, Brother Richardson. Definitely was a joy. What I would just say in closing, in terms of, you know, definitely go to the Prince George's County Board of Elections website for additional information. The Maryland State Board of Elections website for additional information, whether it's registering to vote, finding out which sites to cast your ballot in, what the process is for casting your ballot. Whole lot of changes that we need to be aware of. And the big thing is, folks, just get out there and vote, because my opinion is, if you don't vote, can't complain about stuff.
Joined by my brother, my big brother, immediate past president, Brother Omar Boulware.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brother Mike Richardson.
Welcome to the podcast. Why don't you give us a little bit of background about yourself and your involvement in politics?
Sure, no problem. Hey, just really want to, again, thank you for inviting me out to discuss a topic that's very near and dear to me. I'm so glad that we were able to bring you across those burning sands. Brother Richardson, you're doing a magnificent job as one of our newest brothers in the fraternity. And I know the impact that you're going to have on our chapter and the fraternity is going to pay big dividends for us in the future. So again, thank you for asking me to come out today. So a little bit about me, at least politically. I have a political science background, also military. Okay. And I've been in the D.C. metropolitan area for over 20 years now, made Prince George's County my home. When I did so, I immediately got connected civically through my civic association, and then I joined the Young Democrats of Prince George's County, where I rose to become president of that organization, which is still very near and dear to me, even though I've aged out of it, but I still stay connected to it.
Surely you're still a young Democrat.
Yes, yes. And so from then, I started working on several campaigns. One of our good alpha brother, Brother Mel Franklin, in his race for county council, District 9. I was chairman of his campaign. And then from there, I worked with our former county executive, Rashern Baker, on his successful campaign after his third try for at the office. And he appointed me to a couple of boards and positions during his administration, culminating with me being a commissioner at WSSC, where I was chairman for about a year. So I still continue to stay involved politically. I think it's extremely important that citizens be a part of their government. And so I'm happy that Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated shares that belief that a voteless people truly is a hopeless people. And so I'm actually very happy that I can continue to support one of our major national programs through that effort.
Okay. So the national program of voteless people is a hopeless people was started by the fraternity in the 1930s.
Yep.
And just for the people who may not be familiar with the conditions that led to the formation of that program, can you talk a little bit about what contributed to that?
Sure. I mean, when you look at where we were as a fraternity in the 1930s, we were less than 30 years old. Mm-hmm. Many of the founders and early initiates of the fraternity had moved on from college, and they were very active in their communities. And we were still just a couple of generations removed from slavery. Mm-hmm. World War I had concluded, where a lot of our brothers had sought action as officers in the armed forces. And so they come back, they realize that they still had less rights than, you know, the folks that they were overseas defending from, you know, oppression. So they come back, they realize that we're still considered less than equal citizens. And so they began to immediately get involved.
Wow. Yeah. So it's amazing that the fraternity has for so long, so this is over 90 years now, been involved in registering voters, educating voters in different ways, especially in local politics, because a lot of chapters do things at the local level because your local politics is crucially important.
All politics is local.
Exactly. And so we don't just look at the national elections. We definitely try to make a difference locally. So I appreciate you being involved at that level, because a lot of times the movement happens that we may not be aware of. And so it's good to have people in those positions. Aside from voter registration, I know that's a big part of a voteless people is a hopeless people. Are there other initiatives, other fraternity that tie into that campaign?
Sure. So aside from our voter registration drives, which are extremely important, you know, we also are involved in a lot of voter education and empowerment programs as well. Mm-hmm. In particular, I'll just note, you know, for Pi Epsilon Lambda chapter, I was very fortunate to host a candidates forum with Brother Tony Harris for a couple of years ago, for when the county had just switched to or added two additional county council member at large.
Okay.
And everyone was doing all kinds of forums that particular election cycle, but we decided that we were going to focus on the county council at large position because that was new to the county. We had gone through a charter referendum where we added two at large, and we felt it was important that the residents and citizens of Prince George's County understood what the difference was between an at-large county council member and as opposed to one of the nine council manic districts.
Okay, so let's talk about what is the difference.
So the difference is
people see that on the ballot and they don't
absolutely
know.
So the difference is the at-large members are supposed to provide a enterprise-wide level view of the decision making that occurs in the county.
Okay.
So not just specific to their own council manic district, but at the county at large. And they're supposed to be a voice for making sure that all of our county laws are applied equally and the resources are distributed also equitably. when you have 9 county council members, everyone has their little piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm. They're fighting for their constituents.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And having the 2 at-large members kind of forces those members as well to consider the whole of government approach to how we are going to address certain challenges within the county.
Okay. And so how do the local Alpha Chapter initiatives kind of tie into the national programs? Is it a situation where maybe someone in a chapter has an idea mm-hmm. that they believe will support the program, or is it a direct linkage back to someone at the headquarters?
Yeah. So the way the national program was envisioned was primarily around voter registration. Mm-hmm. However, you know, as we have evolved as a fraternity and are confronted with so many different challenges, that program has also had to evolve a bit. Okay. So that's the reason why we not only just doing voter registration, we're also doing voter education and voter empowerment. So if a brother in the chapter had an idea for how to better engage the public in matters of electoral politics mm-hmm. or voting, they could certainly make that recommendation. Of course, it goes through all of the alpha bureaucracy that, you know, these things go through. But if it is in alignment with, you know, the objectives of the program, which are to stimulate voter registration, voter education, voter engagement, then, you know, it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. We know that Alpha is involved at the local level in politics, but the other D9 organizations are also, mm-hmm. you mentioned Rashawn Baker, who's a member of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity yep. Incorporated. Yep. How are the other D9 organizations positioned to educate registered voters, and is there a correlation or just a partnership with some of them?
I don't know if there's any formal arrangements, mm-hmm. but all of our D9 brothers and sisters do an outstanding job of promoting good civic engagement. And we're very fortunate in Prince George's County to have one of the highest concentrations of Greek life around the world. So when you look at just this past cycle, the number of D9 members that were running for office, I mean, that just really speaks to the level of engagement that our D9 brothers and sisters have within the county.
Yeah, that's interesting, because as I look through the signs, one of the things that I love about Prince George's County is it's a predominantly African-American county.
Yeah.
And when you look at the faces on the signs, you see predominantly African-American faces. But I always try to pick out, you know, that person's AKA.
Yeah.
That person's a, and sometimes they put the colors on the signs, sometimes they don't. You just never know.
Yeah.
So how do people know, just our regular citizens, how do we know what initiatives are out there, how we can get connected, what type of things that we can help with? Is it a situation where we're following social media, or is there a better way to do that?
Yeah, you know, I think the D9 Coalition for Civic Engagement that was recently stood up within the county has done a really good job mm-hmm. of promoting voter awareness, voter engagement, and they're working well together with all the members of the D9 to get that message out either through social media, through print media. But the candidates themselves do a pretty good job of kind of highlighting how they can, you know, their colors, if you will, so that folks kind of recognize, you know, hey, this is the support that I have, even though all of our organizations are supposed to be, you know, nonpartisan.
That's correct.
You know, it when you have a constituency as large as, you know, the Greek population in the county, it helps. Mm. It helps in terms of, you know, being able to pull from a network of potential donors, poll workers, mm-hmm. or, you know, just campaign folks who want to be associated with your campaign altogether.
Hmm. Okay. So in the state of Maryland, we have gubernatorial election,
mm-hmm.
and the two candidates, the two major party candidates are Wes Moore
yep.
and Dan Cox.
Yep.
Did you catch the debate?
I did not. Okay. You know, I'll admit that after I saw some recent polling on the governor's race, I felt like, yeah, I could use my time better than to watch a debate in which I know the leading candidate, who I expect will be successful on November 8th, was going to, you know, kind of, you know, do his thing, which mm-hmm. he's done, you know, throughout the entire campaign. So I was pretty confident that he was going to do well, and I could just catch up on the major clips the next morning. So I didn't watch it in person.
Yeah, so I watched it the next day.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be as impartial as possible, there was one candidate on the stage that was thoroughly unqualified.
Yeah.
And it was clear throughout. Yeah. The other candidate was Westmore. So let's talk about...
I like how you did that there.
So let's talk about, should Westmore go on to win this election?
Yeah.
What would that mean in your mind for the state of Maryland?
Well, I think it really shows what we've always known about the state of Maryland, that it does really celebrate and honor its diversity. Mm. You know, it's taken a while for us to get to this point where, you know, well, at least we thought we were going to have it, you know, 8 years ago. Mm. But I think the coalition that our brother, Wes Moore, has surrounded himself with is going to catapult him to victory. And I think that what this says is that, you know, there is a place for anyone in the state of Maryland who, regardless of skin or background, if you work hard and people believe in the message that you have an opportunity here.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for stopping by, and I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us, educating us, doing the work of Alpha. So,
absolutely.
Until the next chapter meeting, I will see you, and I will see all of you in the next episode of First Impulse.